It's an act of faith when Colin gives the pulpit to a layperson. Also, it's an act of faith that you all attended worship this morning knowing that Colin was gone. So thank you for that. It's very encouraging. I timed this last night, and it came to 1 hour 45 minutes on the dot, so we're in good shape. Our sermon today is a little different from normal. I'll be sharing a report on behalf of the Tanzania Mission Team, and Sharon Petke will offer her reflections. Carlista Bartels, Rebecca Ketchy, myself, my wife Robin, and Sharon Petke departed Kingsport for Tanzania on July 4th. Ted and Deb Germroth had traveled the prior week. All of us, of course, were traveling as representatives of WRPC and in support of Kara Germroth's organization, Moyo Wa Africa, which WRPC has been supporting financially for several years. We arrived in Arusha on July 6th and were reunited with the Germroths. On the afternoon of July 7th, we visited Moyo Wa Africa's Girls' Center. The center is a safe place where girls can live while pursuing their education in Arusha. Achievement of higher education and employment is critical for these young ladies to avoid teenage marriage and to have a chance at an independent future. Our group provided materials for origami and for making bookmarks, and we enjoyed getting to know the girls. The next day, July 8th, we worshiped at Arusha Community Church. In the evening, the young ladies at the Girls' Center prepared a traditional Tanzanian dinner for all of us at Kara's house. And we enjoyed dinner and then had some one-on-one conversations with the girls and learned about some of their career aspirations. The school kits and the hygiene kits that were donated by WRPC were left with Kara to distribute to the girls and also to those coming to Arusha for medical care. On July 9th, we traveled to the village of Ingaruka, which is about a four-hour drive from Arusha. We were welcomed by the choir from the local Lutheran church, and the church's pastor offered a prayer thanking God for our visit and for bringing our churches together. And as Carlista described in the children's sermon, our primary focus for the next several days was the construction of a playground at the local primary school. Prior to the trip, Kara had worked with the school headmaster to identify the project. None of the schools in the district have a playground, and this was seen as a relatively inexpensive way to add some unique enrichment for the students. Through Moyo Wa Africa, Kara raised money to pay for the playground equipment, which WRPC also contributed to. And Kara and Onesmo purchased the equipment and materials, they arranged delivery to Ingaruka, and they secured local labor to help with the installation. And all that was no small task, I can assure you. While the playground was under construction, members of the team were also able to participate in some activities with the around 1,200 students at the school. We blew bubbles and sang songs. We read books in the classroom. We played jump rope, frisbee, and soccer. These students have a lot of energy. The jump ropes, soccer balls, and frisbees were donated to the school at the end of the week. Finally, thanks to the efforts of all involved, we completed the playground by midday Friday, just in time for a short dedication ceremony with the school staff. The teachers and students all seemed very pleased with everything. In summary, we were successful in our mission to support Kara and Onesmo, and that was possible thanks to everyone, not just those who traveled, but everyone who prepared kits, donated money and materials, and prayed for this trip. You should all feel good about the way this group represented the church. Everyone was adaptable and positive, in spite of encountering a lot of unfamiliar people, places, languages, foods, and different ways of doing things. We were good ambassadors of Christ's love everywhere we went. And likewise, we were recipients of Christ's love as well from the people we went to serve. And at this time, I'll turn the pulpit to Sharon for her reflections.
I too thank you for being here and being interested in our experiences that you supported. The worship service in Arusha on July the 8th prophesied to me about what we would experience in Tanzania for the next 2 weeks. The speaker referenced Psalm 48:14, which Noah just read, "For this God is our God forever and ever. He will be our guide even unto death." It reminded her, the speaker, of a time when it was the text in a group study. She asked each member to read it in the version of the Bible they had brought with them. One of the Swahili versions translated guide as sponsor. Then she told a story to illustrate how God is our sponsor continually, constantly, eternally. And I'd like to ask, may I tell you the story in my own words? She called it a Hebrew fairy tale. I'm calling it an African parable. And just to give you a little bit of a visual aid, I suppose, I assigned names to the people in the story, and I picked out pictures of those names that we interacted with to tell the story. Now, it's not their story. I want you to understand that. You'll see that as we go along. But I just wanted you to have a picture to reference. So Carlista and Rebecca have pictures. Carlista has a picture of Joseph. Rebecca has a picture of Charles, okay? Charles is the adult. Joseph is the little boy. Once there was a rich young man named Charles who lived in a palatial guarded complex on a high mountain in Africa. All of his needs were met there. He had no need to leave. However, one day as he was looking down at the cities and villages before him, he became curious about the people who lived there. He asked his father if he could go down the mountain and explore. His father said yes, and then gravely added, "But son, you need to know that life there is different. There, everyone experiences pain. Even you will if you go there." Charles answered, "I'm willing to do that, Father, if I have your permission." His father responded, "Yes, son, you may go. I will miss our communion, but it is good that you want to experience what our people experience." In the city, Charles ventured onto several walkabouts and met many people. He noticed that all had some kind of need. Some of them dealt with their need with peace and joy, and others with bitterness and resentment. One day he met a young boy who lived on the streets. The boy's bright smile and sparkling eyes and friendly offer of help with his bags, that does, by the way, describe Joseph. Anyway, it captured Charles's heart. After accepting the help, Charles asked as they walked along, "What is your name?" There was that smile again. Proudly, the boy answered, "My name is Joseph." Charles stopped, shook his hand, and said, "Nice to meet you, Joseph. Where do you live?" "Wherever there is room for my mattress." Charles looked at the bundle tied to Joseph's back and thought it was the sorriest excuse for a mattress he had ever seen. He invited Joseph to stay with him for the night. The two became fast friends, and soon the visit turned into more than one night. However, as the end of the school break neared, Charles knew his friend would have to return to his home village for school. One night at dinner, Charles asked, "Joseph, when do I need to take you to Ngaruka for school?" Joseph shrugged, looked down at his plate, and asked quietly, "You don't want me to stay with you anymore?" "No, it's not that at all. It's just that I know how important it is for you to go to school." Joseph struggled to keep from crying. "I can't go home," he said quietly. "Mama says it's better for me to live without school than risk Baba's anger for going to school." Charles was appalled. The boy was only 10 years old. It took only an instant for Charles to decide. tell you what, Joseph, why don't you make this your home while you're in school? Joseph's eyes lit up and that big grin popped open. However, Charles continued, you will have to go to school. Before you go, I will teach you what you've missed so that you will be even with the other children. Your part will be to study hard, obey the rules, and learn how to be a good citizen. Does that sound good to you? Joseph readily agreed, with his eyes still sparkling and his smile still wide. Charles arranged for him to attend an exclusive boarding school in the city where his intelligence, respect for authority, and citizenship could be cultivated. He tutored him in academics and etiquette and community living and in personal grooming. Everything was in place for Charles to be successful. However, that's not what happened. In spite of Charles's careful tutoring, sometimes Joseph forgot how to act like the other boys, and they began to make fun of him. And soon the abuse escalated to physical bullying. Joseph was very unhappy and wondered why his beloved sponsor had sent him to a place where he was abused just like he had been at home. He became bitter and angry at Charles. He quit studying and skipped classes. When it came time for school reports to be sent home to parents as the children went on holiday, Joseph decided to change all his grades from failing to passing so that Charles would have to continue to pay for education that Joseph wasn't using. Such was the extent of his resentment. Charles easily discovered the ruse, of course, and compassionately asked Joseph about his reasons for doing it. When he heard about what was happening, he forgave Charles, hired tutors to teach him what he'd missed, and contacted the headmaster to notify him about the bullying. Joseph reluctantly returned to school at the end of the holiday. As he feared, the boys' attitudes had not changed. They continued to make life miserable for him as he continued to resent Charles, and he started to bully boys younger than him. And he even openly cheated so he would be forced to leave the school and go back to the streets. The headmaster called Charles, and he was furious. He told him about Joseph's behavior and sneered, "You can't pay us enough to keep him here. After all, you know very well he's not like the other boys. He's not from around here." Charles thought about Joseph's suffering and why he was acting the way he was. Even though Joseph had expressed no remorse, Charles forgave him in his heart. He made one more remarkable offer to the headmaster. "You know, I look young for my age. I could pass for one of the boys in the upper levels. Let me enroll in your school. Let Joseph stay. And at the end of the term, if he is no better, I will take the punishment you would otherwise give to him." Well, curious about such a scenario, the headmaster agreed. Charles enrolled at the school. Only he and Joseph and the headmaster knew about their relationship. Charles stood up to the bullies whenever any of them harassed a younger boy, even when the bully was Joseph. Charles' staunch defense of the vulnerable impressed Joseph because he knew it all started with Charles' love for him. However, Charles' resolute protection of the younger boys seriously upset the power structure at the school. The wealthy parents of the older boys had bought the headmaster's loyalty. They threatened to fire him and blacklist him from all schools unless he restored their sons to their comfortable positions of power. The headmaster beat Charles, in spite of knowing who he was, and expelled him from school. Joseph stayed, because when he saw Charles' love for him in action, he accepted Charles' gift of education with gratitude. That story illustrates everything I learned in Tanzania, mainly from the Maasai people. I'm generalizing here, but from what I saw, Americans' ideals of individual self-sufficiency and personal independence do not exist in Maasai society. Everyone helps and everyone is helped. because everyone is an integral part of that community. Even guests are welcomed with uncommon hospitality. No one feels superior when they are the helper, and no one feels inferior when they are the helped. That applies in villages, cities, towns, and even in the Serengeti. We learn that most of the same species of animals live and cooperate in community. And sometimes even different species cohabit and share each other's strengths for their common good. I'll tell you how determined God was for me to internalize the message of his sponsorship and of his gift of sponsorship to all of us in community. Most of you know that I became ill about 30 minutes before our plane landed at Dulles Airport in Washington, D.C. I knew I was in trouble, but I didn't know what was wrong. So here's the conversation that went on in my head. I can't tell the rest of the group that I'm ill. They'll insist that taking care of me is the main priority, and they're doing that would severely delay the 6-hour drive to Kingsport. I can push through this because once I get in the car, I'll be okay. I'm not sure I can walk all that distance with my carry-on bags through customs and baggage claim and to the place where no one will be with the car. I might have to ask for help anyway with that. I'm confused. I don't know what to do. Maybe I should pray. Lord, I know I'm not thinking clearly and probably can't make a good decision. Please put a coherent thought into my head. Next thought, and I kid you not, was, don't be stupid. He went on to say, you have a nurse practitioner in your group. Tell Robin how you're feeling. I wouldn't be standing here today if I hadn't heeded God's clear instructions. God took care of me through Robin and later through others on that day, 3 more days that followed in Reston Hospital Center, and more than a week at home. So I ask you, let's not be stupid. At least in this society of our own congregation, let's destroy those lying idols of self-sufficiency and personal independence that we worship in ourselves and in others. For in truth, none of us are totally self-sufficient or independent, are we? We don't plant and harvest and herd and slaughter our own food. We don't spin our own cloth and make our own clothes. We don't carry and boil all of our water. Just because we can write a check to someone to do those things does not make us self-sufficient and independent. It only gives us the illusion that we are. So let me ask a question, and if you can answer it, raise your hand. I want the answer. How many cows do you own? Zero, I see some zeros. I don't see any other numbers. A Maasai visitor would say we are indeed a poor group of people. They are defyingly rejecting and also reluctantly accepting first world values. But a generation ago, that Maasai visitor would be as unimpressed by your net worth as you are by his herd of cattle. Currency in whatever form is a construct of people. It is truly useful only insofar as it allows its possessor to meet a need, her own or someone else's, knowing that someday, somehow, she will need someone else's generosity. When Jesus ministered to the poor, there's no record of him ever saying, go now and be poor no more. yet he has left many messages for the rich to help the poor. Never did he instruct us to not enable them, to direct them to government resources, to limit how many times we help them, to make our help conditional upon their going to school or making a budget or getting a second job. At least in this society of our own congregation, can we be uncommonly hospitable to those seeking our help? Can we offer help without condescension and receive help without pride interfering? At least in this society of our own congregation, can we honor God as our sponsor, honor his call to be a sponsor to someone else in his name, and honor his gift of sponsorship to us through each other? I have now seen that societies can choose connection, community, and cooperation over the illusion of self-sufficiency and independence. I can never unsee it. Kara couldn't unsee it. Then Debbie and Ted could not unsee it. Now there are more of us who cannot unsee it. I hope we have helped you to see it too, especially with what you hear in a few minutes from Rebecca. Help others without condition when asked. Offer to help others when a need is obvious. Receive help when others offer. Ask for help when needed. And I repeat the scripture that we said together earlier, just the last verse. Oh, give thanks to the God of heaven for his steadfast love. His sponsorship endures forever. Now, may we pray?